Well, good morning. Good to see you this morning. Obviously, not everybody left for spring break, so good. Thanks for being here today. My name is Tim Jones. I serve as the executive pastor here at North Webster Church of God, if we haven't had the chance to meet. I've been on staff since 2010. I've been in a couple different roles, and this has been a great home for us. My wife, Danielle, or she goes by Danny, is the manager of our coffee shop. If you've ever been over there, you've seen her smiling face. She doesn't drink coffee, but she likes organizing and talking to people, so it's a perfect fit. I got three boys. They're all in middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, Josiah, Jaden, and Jeremiah. My oldest decided he was going to volunteer for Kids Cove today and got stuck in the Palm Parade, so that was super enjoyable for me. Yep. But no, I love my kids. They're a good stage in life and all that. If you are a guest with us, maybe this is your first time, maybe it's your second time, I just want to say thanks for being with us. One of the ways you can connect with us, figure out who we are, you can text the word guest to that number on the screen, puts you in the queue for communication, helps us get to know who you are. If you want a much more simple way, you can just walk outside of these doors and talk to somebody at our guest service center if you want to know more. But be happy to share more about who we are and figure out where you can plug in around here. Couple announcements before we get going. The message today, this next Friday, we'll be holding a Good Friday service at 7 p.m. right here in the worship center. It's going to be interactive. There'll be some worship. There'll be time for taking communion, time for foot washing if you ever were curious about that. Some different things you can do. I invite you to attend that if you want something to do for Good Friday. We'll be here. Next Saturday, we'll be doing our community Easter egg hunt out at Camp Crosley. Pray for good weather. It's supposed to be spring break, but we had snow flurries yesterday, so don't know what's up with that. But thanks for helping be a part of that, helping prep eggs if you did that, but it's going to be a good time. There's over 1,000 people pre-registered. Starts at 10 a.m. at Camp Crosley. It's going to be an awesome time. We also do something here in the Church of God. We dedicate children. We don't do infant baptism, but we do child dedication. We'll be doing that on Mother's Day this year. We've done it the last few years that way. If you're interested or you'd like to know more about that, we're doing a class on April the 23rd. I believe it's during the 9:30 service hour. You can sign up for that. Even if you just have questions, you want to learn more about it, that's the class to go to. So we'd encourage you to check that out if you are interested. And then the last thing I'd say to you is thanks for participating in the food drive that we did. There was so much food. We didn't weigh it this year, but I'll tell you, from years past doing the Be Rich campaign, there was as much food as that as there was for this time. So thanks for that. I want to give a special shout out to Randy Woodcock and a couple guys from his small group that helped load all that out on Monday. Let me just tell you, they were tired. There was so much food. It is heavy. They got it all out all in one day, and it was awesome. So I just want to say special thanks to them and to you guys for participating in it. I know it's been a huge blessing for our community. Well, with that, we are continuing in our breakthrough series, okay? So as a reminder, our breakthrough, as Jeff defined it the first week, a breakthrough is a sudden, dramatic, or important advance. Something that changes the course of your life going forward and ensures that things will never be the same again. If you were here last week, that was awesome. Lots of people came forward and were asking God for healing in their bodies, healings in their relationship, just an outpouring for that. We're believing that God is going to do miracles, that He has been doing that in all of our lives. And so this is what a breakthrough means, that it's a moment of life change, that God is going to do something difference. And that first week, we talked about what that looks like, that we get to that place where we just say, God, I can't do it on my own. I no longer can fight the fight on my own. I'm asking for your help. I need you. The second week, we talked about how we need God to forgive us for our sin, that sin puts a barrier, a separation between us and God, and we need Him to forgive us of our sin when we do that. And then last week, obviously, we prayed for healing power. Today, we're talking about the subject of what it means to take back our minds, okay? The fighting the battle of the mind, taking back the mind, but that's probably assuming that maybe we had it in the first place. So, I don't know, maybe you could say that today, that, you know, there was a moment that you had it, but you're in the midst of this battle, we're fighting. And so what I'll say to you today is I believe the mind has exponential power. Okay, you know this, I know this, you know, we're smart people. The mind has exponential power. There was a French philosopher many years ago, René Descartes, and he said this, "I think, therefore I am." Okay, I think, therefore I am. He was setting out to prove the existence of God and the existence of humanity, thinking that we are much more than just a group of people that are puppets to a puppeteer or plugged into some automated system. He got to the place that he realized, if I have a conscious thought, then that proves the existence that I am real. I think, therefore I am. Well, the proverb writer said it similarly. He says, for as he thinks in his heart, so is he. So the mind is a powerful thing. The older Hebrew people, they saw the mind and the heart as the same thing. If we visualize, if we think who we are inside of our heart or our mind, then that is who we are going to become. So the mind is a powerful thing. It's an exponential, powerful thing that God has given to us. It can be our closest, most intimate, trusted friend, or it can be our harshest, most critical, and untrustworthy enemy. I see it like this as I thought about the topic for today. Sometimes it feels like a tug of war in our mind. Sometimes we think there's days that I'm winning the battle, right? And I'm giving all my strength, I'm pulling, but there's times that I'm absolutely losing, going back and forth in this tug of war. And to be completely transparent with you this morning, I don't have this all figured out. In fact, I was asking people today to pray for me for this particular topic because I feel very much in the middle of what it means to win the war of my own mind. In my 20s and even in my 30s, people would describe me as a mostly relaxed person, a laid-back person. I always kind of thought things would work out, that it was going to be okay, that God was going to take care of me. If I put faith in Him, it was going to be just fine, and it is. But now that I'm in my 40s, I feel like I'm wrestling more about some of those things. It feels like a tug of war, like I know the scriptures and the right things. And so, just so you know this morning, I believe we're probably all in the same boat. In fact, somebody said to me today, it's okay for you not to have it all figured out. That's right where you're supposed to be. And so maybe that's where you are today. And so the question that I have for us today is it possible to win the battle of the mind? Is it possible? And how are you doing this morning at that battle? How are you doing about the battle of temptation in your mind? When the enemy comes along and tempts you to do the thing that you've always struggled with, how are you doing? Have you won more than you lost? Or are you losing more than you're winning? How is it going for you? Or how about when it comes to your financial security, both in the present and in the future? How are you feeling about that? Are you feeling like you're winning that battle or you're losing that battle? How about when it comes to your kids or your grandkids, raising them? I know as a parent that sometimes I think I'm winning, doing really great, and then there's times I just feel like we're losing, okay? It just feels back and forth. How are you doing with that? How is it going in your mind? Are you winning or losing that battle? What about your health concerns? If you have health concerns, how are you doing with that? How are you wrestling in your mind with that, trusting God with that, not knowing what the future is going to hold, the questions that you have? Or how about our future economy or politics? You know, I've just chosen to stay out of the news right now because I can't help not go to certain places. I need to try to help protect my mind, but how are you doing with that? Or how about when it comes to your emotions? Maybe you're a person that's given over to the emotion of anger. How you been doing in that battle? Have you won more than you lost? Or how about in terms of your patience? Are you a patient person or less patient? Or if you struggle with depression, how is that battle going for you? Or if you're a person that's normally given over to negativism and your mind seeing the glass half empty versus half full, or how about in your career? Are you at the place that you wanted to be, that you thought you'd be, or the place that you want to be going? How is the battle going for you? Is it possible to win the battle of the mind? The mind has exponential power. You've probably heard of this before. It's called the placebo effect, or having a placebo. It's the idea that if you take some type of fake pill or shot or treatment, that it's going to maybe help you with your disease or the problem that you're facing. Scientists for many years thought that this was a failure when they introduced it because it just didn't seem to be producing the results that they want. But now they begin to realize that this type of treatment can help anywhere from 15% to 72%, depending on what it is. It can't heal a disease necessarily, but they found that it can help in certain scenarios, and here's why. That the brain is so powerful that it actually becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. When a person receives a placebo treatment, the brain then begins to anticipate a particular outcome and then communicates to the body for some type of healing. Not for everybody, and some percentages are low, but some percentages are high. The idea is how we think about certain things and perceive them can actually affect how we feel about them physically. And I'm not a scientist, but they say the brain creates new neural pathways in order for this to happen. What I'm saying to you this morning is this is not a power of positive thinking message. Okay, I'm not going to tell you to go home and you just need to think a little better about this, think more positive. That's not what I'm saying to you. What I am saying is the brain has exponential power this morning. But we need to understand a couple things first before we get to the how do we take back our mind and win this battle. The first one is this. We need to know and understand that our minds are depraved in the first place. Hopefully you know this. You know the story. Adam and Eve sinned in the garden. They were cast outside of what was paradise. Humanity has lived in a world of sin, death, disease, and destruction ever since. That doesn't sound very positive. But the word depraved actually means that we're morally corrupt or we're wicked. So to think that our minds are depraved is simply us saying that we have evilness inside of us. And you might think to yourself this morning, how dare you, Tim, call me depraved? But that's okay. I'm calling myself depraved at times. I'm not the greatest person out there. I'm not the most evil person out there. But there are times that absolutely my thinking, my mind can be depraved. It can be wicked. And if you're thinking here this morning, well, I don't think I'm that a person. Well, think about all the good things you've done, and then think about the times that you haven't done good things and the type of person you are in that moment. I would suspect today that there are a lot of Christian people in this room, people that would say they know Jesus, that you're trying to live your best for him, you're trying to be kind to others, you're trying to be quick to forgive and to be generous with your time and your resources. But there's also times that you probably fall into depravity. And if that's the case for us here in this room, people that are Christian people, then how much more for those that don't know Christ? Here's what the apostle said. He says, "You were dead in your trespasses and your sins in which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the air." To be dead in our trespasses means that we're not alive. It means that we are separated from God's love, separated from his forgiveness, separated from his kindness, separated from his peace, separated from his spirit. This does not mean that God doesn't love you. It doesn't mean that God doesn't love the world or other people. It just simply means that because of God's holiness and our sin, there is a separation. There is a depravity between us and God. Our minds are depraved. This is how the Apostle Paul said it later on in the book of Ephesians. "Now this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. They are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, due to the hardness of heart. They have become callous and have given themselves up to sensuality, greedy to practice every kind of impurity. But that is not the way you learn Christ, assuming that you have heard about him and were taught in him as the truth is in Jesus. To put off your old self, which belongs to your former manner of life and is corrupt through the deceitful desires, and to be renewed in the spirit of your minds, and to put on the new self, created after the likeness of God in the true righteousness and holiness." There's a lot of scripture there, a lot of good words that Paul is using, but essentially I want you to know this, that Paul is writing to a church audience. He's saying, don't be like the Gentiles. That's not the way that you learn. You learn to be like Christ. You learned it from me. But he's saying to these church people, he said, don't be like that. I kind of interpret it as that they have the opportunity to be depraved, to go back, to live in a way that they said they weren't going to live any longer. So he was writing to a church, an audience. They're saying they have deeds of darkness, but he's saying, don't be like them. Be like who Christ has showed you to be. So we can be filled with depravity. Our world is filled with depravity. And that is the battle that is going on. Secondly, we have to understand that we're engaged in a spiritual battle. This is not just a mental battle. It's not just an emotional battle. It's not just a physical battle. It's first and foremost a spiritual battle. The Apostle Paul says, "For we do not wrestle against the flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places." You know, even though this world is filled with lots of nice people, and we're probably lots of nice people here today, and our world is filled with lots of beautiful places, and our universe is filled with majestic planets and stars and galaxies, it's also filled with spiritual darkness. Paul is reminding us, for his audience then and our audience today, he's reminding all of us that this battle is happening today. It's taking place in our hearts. It's taking place in our minds. It's taking place in this very room today to work against us, who Christ wants us to become. The spiritual enemy that we are facing is, he's out for death. Here's how Jesus says it. He says, "The thief comes only to steal and to kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." We need to understand that there is a spiritual battle going on. It's going on right now in our hearts, in our minds. And to win this battle, we must focus on the battle of the mind, because it's going on right now. Here's how the Apostle Paul says it to Timothy. He says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and a sound mind." Other translations for sound mind, they might use the word discipline, or they might use the word self-control, or they might use the word sound judgment. But it goes back to the Greek word, which is sophronismus, which means a calling to soundness of mind or moderation. Paul is teaching that God's spirit is not one of fear, but rather it's a spirit, a power over the grave. It's a power over sin. It's a power over persecution. It's a power over temptation. It's a power over addiction. It's a power over sickness. It's a power over our past, and it's a power over our present. Despite living in this world of darkness and each of us having the capacity to sin at any moment, we actually have the power to say no to those things. That is the hope and the truth that we have, that God has given us the ability to have a sound mind, to exhibit self-control, that we don't have to give over to the depravity that exists in our world. What's also interesting is God has given us a spirit of love, a love for other people, people that don't like us, people that don't love us, but he's also given you a love for yourself, the ability to have a love for yourself and also for those that have hurt you. This is the power that God has given us. If you back up just a couple of verses from this, Paul also tells Timothy to fan into flame the gift that God has given him. The implication is this, is that Timothy has some work to do, right? That he has some ability to help with the outcome, to partner with God's Spirit, even though God's Spirit is giving us a power. Timothy has something to do. Some work to be done to help overcome the fear, to help overcome the timidity, the judgmental attitude, the lack of patience. He has some work to do in that as well. So the battle is happening right now. It's happening in our hearts. It's happening in our minds. It's a spiritual battle. And so how do we get to the place that we begin to win the battle of the mind, that there's more wins than there are losses? Well, the first thing this morning is we need to not buy the lies. There's lies that are going all around us, lies that we're telling ourselves, lies the enemy that are feeding us, lies other people are saying about us. We need to identify the lies and make sure that we're not buying into them and we're believing them. Here's what Louis Giglio, if that name sounds familiar to you, he's been around for a while, associated with the Passion Movement. He's written a book called Don't Give the Enemy a Seat at Your Table. He says, we must first identify the lies before we can have victory over our minds. In fact, this is one of the next level discipleship classes that Pastor Todd's going to be offering here in April. I'd encourage you to check into it and sign up for that. But Louis Giglio is saying you have to be able to identify the lies, right? Before we can be able to find victory and truth, and we have to be able to know what the lies are coming our way. Pastor Craig Groeschel, in his book, he's an author and pastor in Oklahoma, he says our lives are always moving in the direction of our strongest thoughts. What we think about will shape who we will become. What have you been thinking about recently? Good thoughts, bad thoughts, positive thoughts, negative thoughts, spiritual thoughts, dark thoughts. what is going on in your mind, the battle that is happening right now, because this is probably true. Whatever we're spending our time thinking about is leading us in the way that our life is going to become. And if they're lies, if it's darkness, I want you to know that those are harmful. These aren't just lies the enemy is telling you to kind of make you have a bad day or discourage you or throw you off track. No, these are lies to harm you, to kill you, to destroy you mentally, emotionally, physically, all of the above. They're harmful. And what Lou Giglio is saying, he says, the problem is when these lies are coming our way, we begin to pamper them. We begin to entertain them. We begin to feed them and shelter them. And then before we know it, Satan has found a seat at our table. And so some of the lies that we tend to listen to are things like this. We think, tell ourselves, or the enemy tells us, we're never going to change. We don't have any hope for change. Or we tell ourselves, you know what? I'll feel better if I go ahead and sin in this moment. Or maybe we tell ourselves the lie, you know what? The gospel doesn't really work for me. I put my faith in Jesus another time and it really just didn't work out. Or maybe we're telling ourselves the lie of I'm not worth much. You know, nobody really cares about me. I'm not worth much. Or maybe we're saying to ourselves, you know what? I'm just a failure. A failure back then. I was a failure then. I'm going to be a failure forever. Maybe that's the lie you're telling yourself. Or maybe you're telling yourself, you know what? I deserve to be mad. I deserve to be bitter. You don't know what that person did to me. You don't know what that person said to me. I deserve to stay this way. Or maybe a lie that says, you know what, I'm never going to beat this addiction. It's who I am. I fought it in the past. I'm fighting it in the present. I'm probably going to fight it just the rest of my life. This is who I'm going to be. I want you to know these are lies. So many more lies that we're telling ourselves. Lies that you know, things that you've told yourself that the enemy is telling you, they are lies. I remember when I was a child, I wasn't perfect. I know it's hard to believe. But I remember probably 7 or 8 years of age, I did something. I think I went down to the basement. I was messing with like a water valve, and I turned some water on and turned off. And of course, there was a big mess. And I have a twin brother and a younger brother, and we're all about the same age, so kind of let them take the fall for it. But that night, my parents came into my room, and they're just grilling me. You know, Tim, did you do this? Tell us the truth. Just tell us. We just want you to be honest. You're not going to be in trouble. Just tell us. And I'll tell you what, I lied, you know, for like an hour it felt like. Stood strong. You know, I wasn't going to give in to them, my 8-year-old self. So they leave the room, and I'm thinking, man, I did it. I stood strong. I got away with it. And not but a few minutes later, I started to feel like junk. Felt like garbage because not only did I lie to my parents, I got away with it. And so a couple days later, I came to them and I confessed to them and told them what I did. And of course, you know, I think they already knew. That's why they were grilling me so hard. They just wanted me to admit it to them. And I decided in that moment, in my 8-year-old self moment, you know what? I don't want to be known as a liar. I want to be known as a truth teller. I want that to be mark my life. I want to be a person of integrity. And of course, you know, that's a lot of years of life between 8 and now. I probably have messed up. I've probably told a lie at different times. But it has been a value that I've tried to live by, that I could be a person of my word. I could be a truth teller. And yet, here's the ironic part. I still believe lies that I tell about myself. I value truth, but I still want to listen to and entertain the lies that the enemy is going to tell me, that other people might say to me, or that I might say to myself. That's the ironic part that I found in all of this. And yet, part of the problem is when we come to the lies that we're telling ourselves or the enemy is, we're far too passive and agreeable about them. You might stand for truth against somebody else. You might go to the hill for it if somebody is lying about you. But when it comes to the lies that we tell ourselves, we're far too passive and agreeable with them. We entertain them. We shelter them. We let them take root in our lives. And we don't realize that these lies are out to harm us. They're out to kill you. They're out to destroy you. This is what the enemy is intended to do, to kill you spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. But one of the ways we can begin to change that is begin to identify the lies that are coming into our life. And here's what the Apostle Paul says to the Philippians in chapter 4. He says, finally, brothers, and sisters can be implied. Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable. If there is anything excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, you think about these things. Think about them. He didn't say, feel about them, go talk about them. He says, think about these things. The Bible doesn't tell us specifically what to think about, what not to think about necessarily. You know, I kind of think about it in terms of like technical stuff. I think this has to be more than just like a good junk email filter, if you know what I'm saying. Anybody, you know, you're familiar with emails. Anybody happy with your junk email filter? No. It kind of works sometimes. It tends to kind of let in the bad stuff and, you know, keep out the good stuff. And you're just kind of wrestling back and forth on that. But we got to get to that place that we don't let these lies come into our lives. We think about these things. And one of those ways, as Louis Giglio says, take some of these as categories. You know, if you're struggling to change your thinking or reorient your thinking, he says, take one of these, whatever is true, and assign it to a day of the week. Let's say it's Monday. You get up tomorrow, and you realize that you struggle on Mondays with particular lies that are coming your way. And you say, you know what, today, instead of thinking about these lies, I'm going to think about things that are true. Things that are true about God, things that are true about his character, things that are true about myself, things that are true about other people instead of thinking about the lies. Or maybe you're going to be thinking about things that are honorable, right? Things that are pure or things that are excellent. Start identifying the lies and assign maybe a category to each one of those days to begin creating a new habit of thinking about these types of things, okay? So don't buy the lies that the enemy is giving your way. Secondly, we need to take captive every thought. Take captive every thought. The Apostle Paul wrote, he said, for the weapons of our warfare are not of flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God and take every thought captive to obey Christ. You know, these strongholds that the Apostle Paul is talking about or thinking about could be something like this. These were walls that surrounded cities that provided protection. They were typically 10 to 15 foot in width or 20 to 25 feet in height. They were big structures. They were meant to protect. And what the Apostle Paul is saying, he says, these strongholds are taking root in your life. You should take every thought captive. He's saying you should forcibly reduce it to the obedience of Christ. Okay, and so it's got to be different than us just deciding, you know what, that lie that's coming our way, that thought that it's not a big deal, it is a big deal. Because as it begins to take root in your life, it begins to build something like this. It begins to build a stronghold. And the stronghold's intended to keep out the truth of God and to keep in the lies of the enemy. So which strongholds have you allowed in your life? How big are they? Are they strong? What lies are you telling yourself to build these strongholds? See, remember, we're far too passive and agreeable about these things. We let them kind of come in our life. We let them take root, kind of live inside of us. And the Apostle Paul is saying, this should happen no more. We should aggressively attack the stronghold. It's the idea of a military unit being in enemy territory, right? They're defending, doing anything they can to defend the enemy's attacks. That's the picture that we should have in our mind, that as the enemy is bringing the attack towards us, we should aggressively counterattack with the truth to begin breaking down these strongholds that we allowed the enemy to build in our life. And number three, we need to guard our hearts and minds in Jesus. You see, in the spiritual battle, we're standing guard. We're trying to identify the lies. We're trying to take every thought captive. But here's the really great news. Apostle Paul writes, he says, and the peace of God, which transcends all of our human understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. What's awesome about this is the promise is it's God's peace. It will surpass all of our human understanding. Remember, the battle is happening in the mind, so God has promised to be there with us, to let his peace overcome, to protect us. And if we back up just a couple verses, he says, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. Don't you know one of the most powerful tools of overcoming the strongholds and the battles is that we can turn our attention towards God and praise Him for who He is? Praise Him for what He's been for you, how He's been to you in the past, how He's been to you in the present, and how He's going to be to you in the future. This is one of the only ways that we can begin to change our thinking, to rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. He continues and he says, "Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God." We don't have to live in anxiousness. Okay, that is a difficult thing to change the mind and the thinking. But the battle is happening, but God has promised to be with us. He says, "Let your reasonableness be known to everyone." You don't have to live in this place of anxiety. And then the promise comes, we just read, "And the peace of God, which transcends all of our understanding, will guard your heart and minds in Jesus Christ." Who's doing the guarding in this verse? Is it you? No, it's God's peace. Because you trusted in Him, because you've identified the lies, because you've decided to aggressively go after the strongholds, because you're having faith in Him, it's the peace of God that's going to be with you. And that is more valuable than anything that we could ever ask or imagine when we're doing battle. So the question is it possible to win the battle of the mind? Absolutely. You may not be perfect about it. You may not be 100%, 100% win for win. But if you're only at 500, at 50%, and you can move to 70, then praise the Lord. Because He can do that for you. He can do it today. I know this isn't easy. You may have come today feeling defeated, like, "Oh, I can't do it again. Lord, I'm here because I'm just kind of going through the motions." But I'm here to tell you, breakthrough can happen today. Because God's power, His Spirit, is with us today and each and every day. Even though you might have failed 100,000 times, He's here to help you succeed today. I want to tell you one last story. It's not a spiritual story. A little bit of an inspiring story. But the story was told by a guy named Trevor Mawad, who was a sports psychologist and a mental conditioning coach for professional athletes like Russell Wilson. Now, if you know me, I'm a Broncos fan. I'm not telling this story just because Russell Wilson's our quarterback, because it wasn't a good season. But Trevor Mawad is telling this story. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2021 of cancer. He was 48. It's unfortunate. But he said his dad told him this story when he was a kid. His dad goes off to a Toastmasters event, which is an organization for helping for leadership and public communication. And he hears this presenter tell this story about his life. The guy was a successful magazine entrepreneur who, when he was in high school, he was a struggling student, almost failing, wasn't going to classes, wasn't doing anything. His junior year, he was required to take the SAT. And somehow, miraculously, the scores came back and he scored a 1480 out of 1600. He was blown away. The average score for the SAT is 1050, if you know. So his mother asks him the most logical question: "Did you cheat?" And he says, "I did not cheat. I tried to cheat, but the test was too hard, so I didn't cheat. It was legit, a 1480. So going into his senior year, he decides to start attending more of his classes, making some changes, right? He starts giving his best effort. He starts hanging around different groups of kids, goes on to graduate high school, goes on to community college, goes on to Wichita State University, and then on to the Ivy Leagues. And after school, he then becomes a successful magazine entrepreneur. After 12 years of being successful, he receives this letter in the mail from the SAT board stating that the year he took the SAT, he was actually one out of 13 students that accidentally received the wrong test score. He'd actually only scored a 740, not a 1480. This person didn't become successful because he had the natural intelligence to do so. He didn't change the course of his life because lots of other people believed in him. He changed the course of his life because he began to believe that he could. His motivation was different. His brain began anticipating a different outcome. His behavior then followed close behind. I have a question for you this morning. If this is true for a non-Christian person, I'm assuming he's a non-believer, How much more so could it be possible for a person that believes in Jesus? How much possible it could be for a person sitting in this room to say, I'm tired of losing the battle. I'm tired of buying the lies. I'm tired of giving up to the same old things. I'm tired of having the strongholds in my life. Jesus, I need you to come and do this for me today. How much more? What is eroding your confidence in God this morning? What has been polluting your understanding in Jesus? We're going to sing a song this morning as a closing song today. And just like the previous weeks, I'm going to give you an opportunity to come forward for prayer if you like. You absolutely could stay and just worship in your seat and pray and receive breakthrough there. But if you'd like to come forward and receive prayer this morning, we have some people that would be willing to pray with you. If you don't want somebody to pray with you, that's fine. Just tell them I'd like to pray by myself. Totally cool. But we're ready. If you want to come forward and receive prayer as we worship today, I invite you to do so. Let's worship together. Would you stand?
You are. Goodbye shame. Goodbye pain. Goodbye grave. It's a new horizon. Goodbye fear. Goodbye guilt. Goodbye shame. Goodbye pain. Goodbye grave. It's a new horizon.
Sing that over your life.
Goodbye fear, goodbye guilt, goodbye shame. Goodbye pain, goodbye grave, it's a new horizon. Goodbye fear, goodbye guilt, goodbye shame. Goodbye pain, goodbye grave, it's a new horizon. Bye-bye. Goodbye fear, goodbye guilt, goodbye shame. Goodbye pain, goodbye grave, it's a new horizon.
If we're going to see victory in our relationship with Jesus, it's got to begin here. The Bible tells us that we should be transformed by the renewing of our minds. And the only way we do that is we begin partnering with Christ to be able to win those battles. I hope you can find breakthrough this week as you begin to think a little bit different and implement some of the things that we talked about this morning. Hope you have a blessed week. Thanks for being here today.